Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, April 8, 2016. The UN mission in South Sudan construct a new health facility for residents outside Juba town.
As a country, we need to move forward in the area of development. And this is one of it that we have seen today. And when we talk of peace, this is the meaning of peace, which is development.
And more foreign business owners say they are being forced to close down due to South Sudan's economic downturn and other factors.
Every time they increase money for license, money for taxation, they increase all. You pay 100, again, the next month they say you pay 150. You pay 150, they say you pay 200.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. First, we first go to Juba, where SPLAIO forces who recently arrived in the capital say they are settling into their camps outside the capital, but complain they have inadequate water and shelter. More than 1,000 troops of the SPLAIO arrived as part of security arrangement for the capital ahead of the arrival of first Vice President designate Riek Machar on April 18. Waki Simon Wudu visited one of the camps yesterday and has this report from Juba.
SPLAIO forces sing during a parade at their camp outside of Juba yesterday. The forces include the SPLAIO's components of the Joint Integrated Police, Presidential Guards and Shared Command Units as stipulated in the August Peace Agreement signed by the leaders of both sides. General James Kwong is one of the SPLA commanders who returned to South Sudan as part of the group's advance team. Kwong toured the SPLAIO camp located about 14 kilometers from the city center.
I want to impact the situation, how they sleep, and what are the requirements. This is what I can be administratively.
So far, Kwong says the opposition's forces are being stationed in two separate camps outside the capital, awaiting their deployment ahead of the formation of the Transitional Government of National Unity. There are no many buildings at the camp. Kwong just visited a few blue tents, some newly dug pit latrines, and a few bundles of spear grass and bamboo sticks lying on the ground. A borehole has been drilled and a few water taps have been installed to provide water. General Kwong says although some opposition forces are now in Juba, one big challenge to implement the peace deal remains.
The only challenge that we found is about the cantonment for the Bahr Ghazal and for Equatoria. This is the only challenge that facing us in JMCC. And we failed to agree. And then we refer it to JMAX because it's become a political. It's not a technical. Otherwise, we would have resolved it. It's a big challenge to JMCC, and it is a big challenge even to the peace.
The JMCC Kwong is referring to is the Joint Military Ceasefire Commission. Kwong says that problem must still be resolved by the political leaders of the government and the SPLMIO. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Tax authorities in Wau State say they are seeing a sharp drop in revenue because hundreds of foreign traders have closed their business, citing insecurity, poor roads, and recent devaluation of South Sudan pound. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Wau.
State officials say 20% of their revenue comes from business profit tax levied on traders, but they say that revenue has dropped by half in recent months. The director of revenue in Wau State, Lydia Edward Tum, says in past years, the state would collect 300,000 South Sudanese pounds per day from shops, markets, and at checkpoints. Speaking in Arabic, she says, these days, tax officials collect only about 30,000 South Sudanese pounds a day.
Honestly, we found that the revenue are getting less, and we ask ourselves why this is so. We found that most traders are closing down their shops. Also, we found that the checkpoints, for example, the one of Jebel Rabeh that used to get a lot of revenues has closed, and no any vehicles entering through these checkpoints.
Tum cites the economic crisis and insecurity as major factors for the decline in state revenues. The state collects revenue to supplement their funding provided by the national government. But Tum says given the steady decline in the state's revenue streams, WOW officials will have a tough time providing basic services to citizens. The government is charged with providing basic services such as health care, education, and road construction with money collected from tax revenue. But there is little evidence to show that taxpayers' money is being put to that use.
With the reduction in revenues, this will negatively hinder government since all state services is funded by the tax collection, and we are confused what to do as rainy season comes, which will make most roads impassable. Our hope is that total peace comes so that all these roads open for better tax collection.
Business people here often complain about multiple taxes they are forced to pay to the state. Mariam Kiwanuka operates a hair salon, WOW's Joe Market. She says if business were booming, paying tax and rent would be easy. Unfortunately, she says that is not the case.
Every time they increase money for license, money for taxation, they increase all. You pay 100 again the next month, they say you pay 150. You pay 150, they say you pay 200. Now for that case, now like no money, no business, no nothing. We cannot even afford to get goods because the rate of dollar is too high. It was better see dollar at least 1,500, 2,000, it was better. We are just struggling. Many people have closed just because of that.
Administrator for WOW Estate Revenue Daniel Utur acknowledges officials charge multiple taxes, which makes it difficult for business owners to make a profit during the economic crisis.
We have a problem between national taxation and the state taxation, because the national taxation are right now in the market collecting money, and the state revenue authority are also doing the same, of which business people are totally confused. Who is entitled to collect those amounts?
Deng says the country's ongoing economic crisis is pushing traders out of business.
The rate of dollars, it goes up daily. So totally, the country is in economic crisis. And as you know, the normal people, and right now as I'm speaking to you, the states have almost 2 months without salary. So how can you expect the normal citizen to buy goods and at the same time are expensive?
A majority of the businessmen and women who are closing down their shops are Somalis, Kenyans, Ugandans and Eritreans, who say it has become impossible to run a profitable business in South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in WOW.
The United Nations Mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS, says it is helping to build health infrastructure in the country. Today, UNMISS inaugurated a primary health care unit to serve hundreds of families in Moroyok village, about 5 kilometers outside Juba. UN officials say engaging in life-saving projects like this will improve relations between the communities they serve. Mungume Davids Rakarinj has more for VOA from Juba.
Men and women of Moroyok community sang and danced as they witnessed the inauguration of the first health facility in their area. Alia Agnes Pastole, a social worker and a mother of six, was among them. Agnes says accessing health services here has always been a bit of a challenge, especially for pregnant women.
You find that a woman wanted to deliver, and sometimes the pain may start or the labor may start at night, so it will be very difficult for us to arrest the situation. We had one, the child, I think the woman prolonged the labor, and then the child was born at around dawn time. So from there, when the child was tired and the mother was tired, the child passed away.
Agnes also says insecurity in the area at night prevents people who become sick from accessing medical services immediately. She says The nearest facility in her village was the Juba Teaching Hospital, some 5 kilometers away. Agnes says she's glad she'll be able to visit a health worker in the neighborhood. Morioko resident Malish Joseph James agrees.
When the health unit is just next, even though it is at midnight, you can bring the child and the child get access to treatment. That's why it is very vital, and I see it is a kind of success that anytime I can access medication and my children can access medication.
The facility was constructed by the Nepalese contingent of the United Nations peacekeeping mission in South Sudan. UN military official Brigadier Andrew Kagame says such initiatives help build cordial relationships between the mission and the area residents.
We realize that effective community engagement activities, which are also a paramount factor to achieve our mandated tasks, should be considered in line with our operations. To this end, Sector South Headquarters endorses the need to increase our community outreach programs, since it will enable us to build confidence in the local population and also build a very cordial relationship between the enemies and the people of the Republic of South Sudan.
Justin Nyoma, the head of Juba's country's health department, says this is what the South Sudanese people have been longing for.
As a new country, as a country which needs to move forward in the area of development, and this is one of it that we have seen today. And when we talk of peace, this is the meaning of peace, which is development.
Aid agencies have reported numerous cases in which both government and rebel forces have looted and destroyed health facilities during the more than 2-year-long conflict. Now that the fighting has come to an end, Nyoma says the fighters should focus on building the nation.
This will be the right example from you that our soldiers of SPLS will pick it and take a step forward for development of this country.
Nyoma says it's high time South Sudanese lay down their guns and take the lead on developing their own country, especially healthcare. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
Tune to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a concert promoting peace after many months of fighting. That story after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
if you had a chance to travel in outer space to Mars, would you do it? And why?
Mars? Yeah, I would like to go to Mars, but definitely come back. Yes, not to go and reside there. Hey, I want to see how the place looks like now, because I know Mars is not like the Earth, so I want to see a different planet.
I will be ready to go for it, because if others can go, why not me? I will go there to discover what is there.
I will not go for it, because one, I have not yet explored the ground space. Why should I go to outer space without understanding or knowing the ground space?
If I'm to travel to space, I think I will do it. Yeah, I will do it. The reason I will do it is that I'm a geoscientist.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Authorities in Yambio County in Budwe State are encouraging young people to use music as a way of promoting peace. They are not just talking about it. They organized a concert this week to promote a culture of peace in their community. Gift Friday has more for VOA from Yambio.
Less than a year ago, insecurity was rampant in Yambio. Authorities imposed a 6 p.m. curfew because of deadly violence. Enoka says that has changed and now it is important to nurture peace.
We, the county authority, we come out with this initiative in order to promote the peace which has been signed between the government and the SSNLM in Yambio County, and to let everybody feel that the signing of the peace was not the day of Saturday, that should be the end. It is the continuation process.
Enoka says the concert was also intended to promote the local Zande culture, which he says is fading amongst young people in the state. During the concert, organizers served local brewed alcohol from maize commonly known as daga or pete in the local Zande language. Tutu Philip Fadul, who resides in Yambio's Masia area, praised the local authorities for organizing the concert. Fadul says The people of Yambio have suffered far too long and deserve to live in peace.
We are very happy that we have sent peace. Then, so this is a time for us to enjoy it. That's why even you can see us here with our bottles. We are celebrating and enjoying, very happy. Because what I've seen here actually shows the sign of peace already in the place.
Another Masia resident, Siham Rose, says peace is prevailing in Budwe State and Yambio County in particular. Speaking in Zande language, Rose says residents can now move at night without fear of being attacked.
Before, if you want to go to your husband's place, you go as early as 7 p.m. But now, even if at 3 a.m., I can still go to sleep at my husband's place without anything happening to me at night. I am very happy about that. Now we are dancing up to morning. That is what we wanted.
Amos Ganiko, a resident of Yambio's Kuze area, says peace means people should be able to sit down and enjoy each other's company.
Since I came, there is no anybody who can even talk to you so bad. So we are really knowing that, so the peace has already signed. So that's why we have to sit together to drink some bottles then.
County Commissioner Enoka is welcoming agencies to Yambio County to help rebuild the area and resettle the thousands of people who were displaced from their homes during the fighting.
The international NGOs, the national NGOs, please, you are all welcome to Yambio County now in order to help the people of Yambio, to let them develop, to let them feel that they are in peace. They are in total, complete peace. And their areas has been destroyed. They need development. They need rehabilitation.
Enoka says, now that there is peace, county authorities hope to begin providing basic services again. Gift Friday for VOA News, Yambio.
A Washington-based NGO says the Obama administration should handle its political problems with Sudan in much the same way as it did with Iran. The Enough Project says the U.S. should begin by intensifying financial pressure on Sudan whilst simultaneously deploying more focused, enhanced, and modernized sanctions that specifically targets people who are responsible for continued atrocities and corruption in Sudan. Ayan Bior has more from Washington.
Iran, much like Sudan, was the target of comprehensive U.S. sanctions for more than two decades until U.S.-led negotiations with Iranian officials between 2009 and 2013 led Iran to the negotiation table on its nuclear program. It did not happen overnight, but eventually the Iranians engaged in serious talks with the international community. The U.S. was able to come up with new approaches to help ease the burden of some of the pressures on the Iranian people. Brad Brooks Rubin, a senior policy analyst at the Enough Project, thinks a similar approach to Sudanese sanctions can have a similar effect in ushering in a peaceful, uncorrupt society in Sudan.
Even with the comprehensive sanctions that are in place, there are still any number of ways that the Bashir regime has been able to continue to receive funding and really kind of maintain its kleptocratic behavior. And so the modernized sanctions, these new tools that I mentioned, allow us to be far more focused, far more targeted, far more specific about the kinds of pressures the U.S. government can try to impose to get at those kind of remaining avenues for the regime to pursue its kleptocratic and violent behavior.
The trade embargo in Sudan, which was established in late 1997, has restricted the flow of essential items in and out of the country, but at the same time has restricted the flow of new technology that could transform the service sector in Sudan. The 20-year-old sanctions have triggered unintended consequences for the people of Sudan. The Sudanese cannot replace aging equipment used in public transportation or hospitals. Brooks Rubin says modernizing the sanctions against Sudan could create leverage and pressure that spur an inclusive process that can lead to a transition to democracy, but at the same time alleviate the negative impact on civil society.
Again, in other sanctions programs, we've seen an expansion of people-to-people, academic exchange, professional exchange, research, relationships between the U.S. and the country in question. So, you know, we've seen that extensively in Iran and Cuba, and we think the same should be done across the board with Sudan, as well as ensuring that licenses for things like food, medicine, and medical devices are issued efficiently.
While the economic, political, and security landscape of Sudan and Iran are different, the Enough Project argues that both governments have become severely compromised due to their isolation from the global financial system. Brooks Rubin says the sanctions on Sudan are not comprehensive enough, and there is a lot of opportunity to adjust them to support the people.
The comprehensive sanctions, the blanket sanctions that we have, aren't quite enough to get at those things more specifically because of the way the regime has been able to structure its business relationships. Our belief is very much that sanctions and pressures, any money laundering pressures and other things, always have to be used in the service of a clear foreign policy goal and a foreign policy process.
The Enough Project says one way to mitigate the negative impacts of sanctions is to create general licensing to allow academic exchanges with Sudan. Another suggestion is to expand the list of entities owned or controlled by the government of Sudan. For VOA News, I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
Turning to Kenya now, the International Criminal Court dismissed its case against Kenyan Deputy President William Ruto and a local director of a radio station this week for their alleged roles in 2007-2008 post-election violence. Ruto told reporters in Nairobi Friday that the ruling was a proof of his innocence. Lenin Ruvaga reports from Nairobi.
Flanked by his wife, mother, and children, Kenya's Deputy President William Ruto addressed journalists.
I can confirm to you that I know of nobody or group of people or network of individuals who planned violence against anyone. I can also confirm to you that I attended no fundraising or any form of raising money to buy anything to harm anybody.
The ICC charged Ruto in 2012 with three counts of crimes against humanity for his alleged role in orchestrating violence that followed the 2007 election. More than 1,100 people were killed and 600,000 displaced. On Tuesday, the judges dismissed the case against Ruto and a local radio director, Joshua Arap-Sang, for lack of evidence. In a written statement Wednesday, ICC prosecutor Fatou Bensouda said there had been, quote, deliberate and concerted efforts to derail this case through witness interference. She said 17 witnesses withdrew their cooperation after intimidation, social isolation, and threats. Ruto took no questions from reporters Friday, but he maintains his innocence.
I have searched my conscience and my soul, and I have chosen that all those who gave false testimony against me, I have chosen to forgive them. And it is my prayer that the same God who has vindicated me will help them come to terms with their acts.
Ruto pledged support from the government for victims of the 2007-2008 post-election violence. The ICC terminated a separate case against Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta last year for his alleged role in the post-election violence. Prosecutors alleged witness tampering and intimidation in that case as well. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Nairobi.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. SPLA-IO forces, who recently arrived in Juba, say they are settling in to their camps outside the capital, but complain they have inadequate water and shelter. More than 1,000 of the expected 1,370 troops have arrived as part of the security arrangements for the capital, ahead of the arrival of First Vice President-designate Riek Machar, on April 18th. The forces include the SPLA-IO's components of the Joint Integrated Police, Presidential Guards, and Shared Command Units, as stipulated in the August peace deal signed by the leaders of both sides. General James Kwong is of the SPLA commanders and returned to South Sudan as part of the group's advance team. While touring the SPLA camp, located about 14 kilometers from the city center, Kwong said he wanted to inspect how his forces sleep and their requirements. So far, Kwong says the opposition's forces are being stationed in two separate camps outside the capital, awaiting their deployment ahead of the formation of the transitional government of national unity. Wow State tax authorities say they are seeing a steep drop in revenue collection because hundreds of foreign traders have closed their businesses. The traders cite insecurity, poor roads, and the recent devaluation of the South Sudanese pound as the main reasons for shutting down their shops. State officials say 20% of their revenue comes from taxes levied on traders, but that revenue has been cut in half in recent months. The director of revenue in Wau State, Lydia Edward Thum, says in past years the state would collect 300,000 South Sudanese pounds per day from shops, markets, and at checkpoints. Now she says they collect only about 30,000 South Sudanese pounds a day. Thum cites the economic crisis and insecurity as major factors for the decline in revenue. Thum says given the steady decline in the state's revenue streams, while officials will have a tough time providing basic services to citizens, the government is charged with providing basic services such as health care, education, and road construction with money collected from tax revenue, but there's little evidence to show that taxpayer money is actually being put to those uses. And finally, the United Nations Mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS, says it is helping to build health infrastructure in the country. Today, UNMISS inaugurated a primary health care unit to serve hundreds of families in Morioke Village, about 5 kilometers outside of Juba. UN officials say engaging in life-saving projects like this will improve relations between the communities they serve. Alaya Agnes Pastol is a social worker and mother of six. She says accessing health services has always been a challenge, especially for pregnant women there. Agnes says insecurity at night prevents people who become sick from also accessing medical services immediately. She says the nearest facility in her village was the Juba Teaching Hospital, some 5 kilometers away. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
And that's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with a peace song by J.J. Kang. The title is Kun Kale. It's in Nuer. I must admit my Nuer is not that perfect, but let's have a listen. We have been listening to Kang JJ with that peace song in his native Nuer language. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Have a peaceful weekend and join us again on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.